Welcome to Executing the Vision Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Hunter, president of Emerge Labs. On the podcast, we'll get to know the person behind the vision, their successes, their challenges, and their plans for the future. If you're interested in becoming a guest or know someone who might be a good fit, stick around to the end and we'll discuss how to apply. Now, enjoy the show. First of all, I'd like to welcome Richard Blank here. He is with, Costa Rica Call Centers, correct?
That's right.
Okay. I think we'll dive into some of the work-related items and different things later. But first thing I want to start with is just getting to know you and your story a little bit. Where you came from, you know, kind of just how you ended up in Costa Rica with a call center. So I did a little research on you earlier. Looks like you grew up just outside of Philadelphia.
That's right.
Okay. But yeah, let's start by just kind of tell me a little bit about that, a little bit about, you know, going to college, going overseas, and then how you landed in Costa Rica.
Yeah, not a problem. Once again, being from Northeast Philadelphia, it's great. I mean, when I graduated the Proud Abington High School back in 91, a lot of my friends were going on to medical school, law school, engineering, architecture, and Ivy League. I didn't know what to do, so I doubled down on my favorite class, which was Spanish, and went to the University of Arizona, was a Spanish major. Spent my junior year abroad just to make sure I really got a good grasp of the language. And I interned for Telemundo during college, post-grad, the importers of Corona, I got a job. And so I had momentum. Getting a little return on investment, myself marketable.
And then we happened to be in Sevilla. We did part of our honeymoon there.
Oh, sweet.
So what made you choose that? How did you end up there?
Well, U of A had a wonderful second language program. And so for me, Spain was the option. And I just didn't want to do one semester, Brad. I did a full year. So I spent my first half of the year in Cadiz, in Andalusia, and a part of the day, Santa Maria. And then I was in Madrid. Now, for the second half of the year, I was in Sevilla for the university. I lived on Calle Betis, and that was just so much fun. That was the best year of my life. Shed some skin. I mean, I went to more museums, read more books, met as many people as I could. And really, I didn't have a phone at that time, in a sense. So it wasn't watching television or even going to movies. I drank so much life that year that it really did change me, almost like a hero's journey when someone leaves the small town to slay a dragon, come back and tell tall tales. I definitely changed when I came back to the States.
Sweet. And then we had stayed at that, that pretty fancy hotel that's kind of right like in the middle of it all there, sort of. We couldn't even figure out how to get to it. Like the roads, you had to kind of drive on the sidewalk a little bit, right in that historic district there. And so then I assume that experience there is then what really led you very much so in this direction, right? I mean, I assume from there that had a very direct connection to the Telemundo.
It did. It showed dedication. And I was doing above and beyond what school expected of me. Once again, I was living it. And so when I interned for Telemundo, I gave 20 hours a week doing promotions and public relations. Had a chance to meet Miguel Quitan and Pedro Sefsak. These were very influential newscasters out of Los Angeles, which was Miguel. And Pedro was out of Miami doing the talk show against Christina that was on Univision. And so these were primetime players. And when they came to Tucson, I got to see, it's not a humble side, but these incredibly popular and famous celebrities really knew how to react and deal with their fans. They had incredible soft skills. Forget the photographs and autographs. They were just hugs and stories and kissing on the cheek. And I saw a different side of celebrity or even influence, where if you have the leverage, you can really pay it forward in certain ways. And these individuals, knowing that I'm an Anglo-Saxon, I'm not Latino. And so they encouraged me to continue my public speaking and working with public relations in Spanish. And so these were wonderful mentors along the way that said, go, Richard, go.
Okay. And so then they came to Tucson. You kind of got an introduction to them there. And then that's what led to the internship with Telemundo. that?
Kind of, sort of. That you want a really funny story? My goodness. When I was in college, there was a company called LA Ski and Sun Tours. They used to do like the ski trips to Reno and the
Okay.
spring break trips to Mazatlan. Well, I put four and four together and I started selling those things sophomore year. So not only did I go for free, but I made a ton of money to be able to have a good time with my friends for the trips. That parlayed into me knowing a guy from Champ's Hair Salon because he would cut the hair of the guy that would come into town. So through introduction, he then was the guy that cut the hair for the Telemundo people. So one day I was making sure my hair was getting cut when the promotions guy was getting cut, Martin Pareda. And I introduced myself and I said, "Hey, I'm willing to work for free. I want to go to the parties and have some fun. I don't want to be back there cleaning toilets or putting papers together. No, I want to be out and about with a shirt and stickers." And so he goes, "Okay." And so I pitched myself to Jay Cohen, who was the owner of the Phoenix and the Tucson markets. And you know, it's kind of funny. Like today, I could do this with my eyes closed and arms behind my back, but I could only imagine this overly enthusiastic 21-year-old that probably had a wrinkled shirt, you know, showing up there, really no resume or game plan. But he's telling them that I know LA Ski and Sun Tours, Dino from Champs Hair Salon, Martin's my man, and I should work with you. And it's just whatever it is, the guy just shook his head. He's like, "Do what you gotta do." And I was there for 2 years. And so post grad, it got me a great job working for the importers of Corona because they saw the Spanish and the marketing. And that was a great job for a year. But when I was 27, a friend of mine owned a call center here and he wanted me to come down for 2 months just to teach English. So I was in between jobs at the moment and I had to get past some parents' guilt. And so I decided to come down here for just 60 days. Well, those 60 days turned into 4 years. I worked at my friend's center for 4 years. I fell in love and married the girl of my dreams here. And you know what, Brad? I didn't learn it from sea level. I learned the business from the inside out. When I was at my friend's center, I learned retention and onboarding,
And so
customer
you
support.
came down. So he had the center going,
Oh,
and
yeah.
he needed, you were a buddy of his, and he said, "Hey, I know you speak great Spanish.
Yes.
You're a friend of mine. I need you
Yes.
to kind of help on that front." So that's how you initially kind of got
He's a
in the
college friend of mine that had a company here. And he goes, "Hey, Richie, why don't you just come down for a couple of months to, you know, teach English? You know what it really is? It's like road trip. Let's switch." He's like, "Delta House." He's like, "Yo, Delta House, come on down for 2 months and we'll just have some fun."
And you
You
were
know,
in San, this was happening in San Jose, I assume.
that is correct, in San Jose,
Okay.
Costa Rica. And
Yeah.
so,
Okay.
you know, it's very, when you have friends, you can hang out, have a beer, and watch the game. But it's very interesting when you go to work with them or you see them in a responsible situation. So I think my friend, it wasn't that underestimation, but he really was just thinking of it as more just a breather for me and to go back home and have a good story to tell. Little did he know that when I was there, not only was I taking it seriously, but I was going above and beyond and stepping up. And when those 60 days came, Brad, and we sat down, you know, a real man shouldn't cry. But when he said, "Hey, Richie, do you want to stay?" I was like, "Really? Really? I was just about to ask you." And then I knew. And there are certain times in your life, a coming of age, when you turn a page and a chapter begins, that I shed some skin and I wasn't going to muck it up. I wanted to do whatever it took to stay an expat, live abroad, and see if I can test the waters on my own without my family networking or any sort of influence or starting on third base, which is fine. There's nothing against it. But what would it be like to start from scratch again at 27 and buy a Yugo? I bought a $200 Yugo. It was a 1993 GVX, which stood for Good Value Extra. What are you talking about? Yo, Brad, it had a hole on the driver's side, like Fred Flintstone could put his foot through if he really wanted to. I think people would throw their snow. My point being is that I didn't want any help or assistance. And I could have bought a better car, but I didn't want to. I wanted to buy the cheapest car possible and start literally from scratch and see where we could grow this thing. I wanted to do it organically. And,
Yeah,
you know.
so I will say one thing. As far as like, it seems like someone that had a feeling and a sense from early, I mean, your first interest was Spanish as far as school, right? That you just really seem to have headed completely straight down. I mean, everything and has led you, that path seems to have just led you right where you are, you know? It's
Sure.
wild. You know, usually it's like there's twists and there's turns and like I like this and I thought I liked this and then I didn't, but it seems very much that that passion has really kind of kept you on track one way or another throughout your whole career.
Yeah, but Brad, there are no straight lines,
Yeah,
and
right. Yeah,
you
now
don't
we'll get
think
to
I
the
had
twists
twists
and
and
the
turns,
turns.
zigzag?
Yeah.
Man, I have more than you could know. I couldn't compare notes to anybody, and it scared the daylights out of my parents that I wanted to invest in a second language. Nothing wrong with it, but I should be in a family real estate business or going to Harvard Law like my grandfather did. And so, what do you
Okay,
do
because
with the
that I
passion and
noticed you
dreams?
had the national realtor broker, so that's kind of where that came from. You were part of the that was kind of a family thing of like this is what you should be doing. So you dabbled your toe in there for a while, but then
I
that just
had to
wasn't
be
it.
there. It's a
Yeah.
family business. It's what's
Okay.
expected of me. I'm not the black sheep. I'm just the person that had a long run that hasn't ended yet. Brad, when you do dedicated practice, if you do things above and beyond, I have a luxury trade. Why? Spanish was everywhere and anywhere. All the world's a stage. I just didn't have to download or go to a library somewhere or travel once a year or two. And so it was very easy for me to keep building upon it, not forget it, and practice it. And the real reality check was when I would meet Latinos, depending on my level, from basic to intermediate to advanced. Whenever I would show active engagement, my vocabulary, they would always assist me with additional and assistance in grammar. And the reinforcement that I would get from every single Latino, knowing that I'm in there to win it, really was something that the naysayers and gray believers couldn't understand. Anyone that learns a second language has to know that sort of structure and discipline. And if you have a slight accent, it's just a beauty mark. It shouldn't hold you back from anything. And so these are the sort of obstacles that I might have had to, as you say, zig and zag in the road to not defeat me, to not get me to ruin my pace and rhythm. And it's not for me to say to someone, I told you so. That's like fifth grade playground. This is for Richard. This is for my own foundation, Brad, for my own roots of my tree. And there's a lot of the times people try to ruin that spirituality of the love that I had towards certain things, or they would laugh about it, or just tell me it was too difficult, or what are you doing? And so you might need to, from time to time, go outside of a bubble. And if you respect others' opinions, take the balls and the strikes and the black and the white. But you need others to assist in balancing your core. And I had to do this with a culture that I was foreign to me when I was a child. Now I'm used to it. But once again, I kept dipping my toe into that, and the water kept getting warmer. It wasn't cold anymore. Eventually it was comfortable temperature. And so I just decided to dive in and stay in. And
Okay, so now you're 27. You got down there, you loved it.
oh
Your
yeah.
friend convinced you to stay. So
Oh
now
yeah.
you're working with your friend, and now I assume it's kind of you're starting to transition into this, like it's now not just about teaching English, but it's about really learning the business and really being involved in the business at this point.
Correct. CRM systems, headsets, phone systems, quality control department, the training that they do, the sort of accounts that they have, the labor laws. It was overwhelming, but if you take big piles into smaller piles, you can carry it. It almost reminds me of Bruce Lee going into the dojo and beating up everybody and making them eat that sign that says Chinese are dogs. You don't do that. And so I decided not to become overwhelmed. I like first downs compared to touchdowns. I'll take it. I'll take 100 pennies over a dollar. That's why a lot of people don't understand the panning for gold. I'll still get my ounce, but I might need to back break for it. And that's okay. And that sometimes shows the Chuck Wepner distance that you can get versus Ali, or people that can go distances. And so, Brad, I was in this for the long game. I wanted to learn this business. But I also wanted to learn the gripes, the happy and the sad. I wanted to know what was pissing people off. And the main issue that they had was dignity. This call center industry, people see individuals as expendable robots and just get every drop out of them until they fall over and die. Well, these are real people. And unless you've sat in that cubicle, that's why some of the greatest generals sit on the ground and eat with their men. And so I rose the ranks, and this is my wheelhouse. I just don't cut checks. And so when it comes to training soft skills or getting on the phone, these people see that I can do this six ways to Sunday. And so I gain their respect that way. But I don't boast. What I assist, because English is my first language, is to give them certain vocabulary to expand on their skills, give them better rebuttals, and do certain things in my environment through play and gamification so they don't spiral out of control. They can put that energy into video games or pinball machines, so it's one less cigarette, one less Instagram. And they can be the runner that runs in place at the light, just doesn't ice a kicker.
Yeah, so talk to me about that part of it. Talk to me about the gamification. I saw you noticed you had mentioned that too on I think some of your LinkedIn stuff. So help me understand what exactly you mean by that and what that
I'm a retro pinball collector first and a business owner second. In fact, I don't even like talking about business. Ask me about my dreams. I'm a Generation X. I grew up in the 70s and 80s and some of the coolest places in town were the retro arcades. Beautiful marquees and machines, and it was safe and clean and fun.
Yeah, I too spent some time. We had a place called Star World where I grew up. You had the arcade and the roller rink is what it was, like a huge arcade and then also a roller rink, and that's like where you'd go. That was like your Friday nights.
Yo, Brad, remember when you used to put the quarters up on the marquee so you have your line and asteroids and Pac-Man?
Yeah.
And then when Dragon's Lair came out, which were those laser disc games.
Yeah.
But I loved it. And one man's trash is another man's treasure. And arcades down here are going out of business faster than you can imagine. And so when you get on the local markets, the Mercado Libres and the Craigslists, you will see people that are just getting rid of their arcades. And so most of the games I'm not looking for, it's usually fighting games from the 90s. I want retros. And so all of a sudden I started collecting pinball machines. I'm up to 15 right now. And I got six jukeboxes, an air hockey table, and an assortment of machines. But what's my point? I have a huge area here. And instead of putting in additional lockers, I just put in a row of machines and I have games in my house. It's a happy medium. It allows people to meet others from different departments. You can let off steam recharge batteries. I've seen people fall in love by the Pac-Man machine. They're smoothing. And it's really enabled people on their first day with me to play the games prior to any training class so they can bond with the other people in class. And then instead of just absorbing, now they're contributing because their defense drops. And that mass goes from a 10 to a 6. So that 4 then gets moved into forward motion. So it's just mass distribution. And for me, it's also a good sign for my clients. Why don't you have games in your office for your people? It's also a good way to show people how I treat myself and how I treat the people that work here. Amazon's 10 times my size. Jeff Bezos is the man. And with all due respect, I don't think he's played pinball with all of his agents like I have. And so when it comes down to the call center Olympics, I might not win everything, but Brad, there's a couple areas in which I crush. And that's been more than enough for me to be in business for 16 years, have people with me over a decade and grow to 150. And so slow and steady. Mm-hmm. And if you do, then you'll have the fidelity and the people that will walk with you long term.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about some of the elements involved in your business. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, I assume a key element in your world is going to be training, right? Yeah. You got to be able to bring people in and really get them dialed in. Just talk to me a little bit about like that process, what your training might look like compared to somebody else. And it seems like that's one of your your passions in this, because I also noticed too, see that, you know, you're still doing volunteering and teaching English. And so I assume that, you know, that front, that training, that creating that good environment seems to be where you really shine.
I just like to make it fun. Don't you like Dead Poet Society, Captain My Captain? I mean, there's got to be certain teachers that you like that inspires you.
And now are you, a class comes in, right? A group of new hires comes in. Are you the primary trainer? You have a kind of team of people and you're kind of partially involved. Like what does that process look like? I personally over the years have been involved and helped create a lot of training programs. And I too really like it. I do like when I go into companies and do any sort of consulting, that's always like one thing of like, talk to me about training. And so many times it's just like, oh, that's terrible. Like that's not fun. That's not inspirational. Like that's no way to start. But yes, I'd like to understand kind of, you know, how you go about it.
Usually these training classes, they don't take anything out of it. It's just they were there, and then for the next 6 months, they keep asking questions so they catch up. Depends on the client. The client usually needs to do the meat and the potatoes. What I do is the onboarding soft skills intro, because, you know, once again, I don't want to step on toes and time is money, but I think it's essential that I work with them on conflict management, on rhetoric, on diplomatic and strategic vocabulary to get rid of certain bad habits that they might be bringing and molding them on brand new good stuff. So it's a good chance for me to put them through the Richard car wash and then also detail them a little bit. But prior to that, there's two or three steps before they even get into that training class. So we are able to filter out the people that could be mercenaries, cancers, jumpers, or just not the right fit. But they're in the class. And so what I like to talk about, it's almost like a knight in chivalry in the Middle Ages. You have your armor, your shield, and your sword. And so I like to discuss with them the psychology of walking onto a battlefield prior to me giving you anything yet. So we discuss fear, and prior to just lecturing, it always has to be rhetorical arguments. The first thing prior to anything, I say, hey guys, have you ever had an owner of a company train you before? Very rarely someone raises their hand or even meets someone. So Brad, guess what? I already got a point there and I already got their respect. And then we talk about fear, which is morbid anticipation. I go, listen, man, if you're not robbing a bank, don't be afraid of a cop. If you're not cheating on a test, don't be afraid of your teacher. And if you come to work, pen at the ready, why are you afraid of Brad and Richard? We're here to support you. And don't judge me on what happened at your last job, and I'm not going to judge you on what Billy did. So I get that straight, too. I got to go Philly old school with them. And then we just talk about structure. We talk about attention spans of 30 seconds, like breaths and bites. Sipping things and information. And so a 10-minute conversation is 20, 30-second checkpoints, okay? And there's give and takes. And if they're prospecting, they need to do, within the first 30 seconds, a company name spike, two buffer boomerang techniques, which is readjustments of tones and answering questions, and then a positive escalation technique in order to get the pass, the pitch, the compliment, and when you call the company back, you have that sort of circle. And so these are ways to have romantic deaths and jump clouds. So I'm preparing them before making these calls. We talk about straight line theories. We talk about aggressive to passive to assertive behavior, the vocabulary and the timing to get them back on, raking questions, tie down questions, pin down questions, transitional sentences, pausing before names and numbers to give it a trigger word and a spike. And there's also ways to gauge the reactions to see if you need to ask additional clarification questions and checkpoints to move forward. A simple one is the military alphabet, so things don't bounce back. And chances are someone has served in the military. So that's just another anchor to begin to build from. And so taking copious notes, meeting minutes, due diligence prior to voicemails and emails. So you've given yourself such incredible momentum, it's, you know, it's yours to lose. And I play those sort of odds. It's like a perfect hand of blackjack. I can't help it if certain cards come out. but I'm not going to fumble footballs. And my goodness, within the first 30 seconds, I have taken your gatekeeper from being a trans hang-up person to me thanking me for my time, double-checking my information, and transferring the call to you, Brad. And so it's not by hook or by crook. And we don't compromise ethics, values, and morals. And please do not compare the majority of call centers to the Wolf of Wall Street, Boiler Room, or Glengarry Glen Ross, because not everyone slings stock. There are some incredible individuals out there that work for companies that make and receive calls, that can retain clients, do upsells, get referrals. And you know this, my good friend, that the most mature way to be a business owner is the exit interview. If there is something that you can learn, what you have done that lost the client, or what your competition had done to earn their business, that dollar can earn you $10 if you just make those adjustments. Whoosh. And so that, my friend, and my deep breath supreme pizza answer to you, is kind of how I see things.
And so, okay, so here's my just general take at the moment is a client comes to you. They're searching for a call center.
Yeah. Right?
Maybe they've already had other call centers. They're coming to you with, okay, here's our product. Here's what we're selling. Here's the script we use. Here's how we do it. And I'm guessing that you probably are, and I guess explain to me what I'm envisioning is you're probably like, okay, that all seems great. That seems wonderful. However, let me show you, let me kind of add, and I assume that you kind of take things from there and then really, you know, just a lot of the things you're mentioning, a lot of the seems like quite a science as compared to my limited experience in the call center world, right? You know, when I personally have dealt with other call centers in the past, I didn't feel like I get anything near this type of experience. You know, it was just a more straightforward. It was not that exciting or energetic. It was just like, yeah, okay, so, you know, here's how we work. Here's how we do it. You know, we can get you people like this. We can get you people like that. You send over the stuff. You know, it just seemed like, and we got those type of results, right? We got the type of results that were like, eh, I don't really know. But to hear you talk about this, it seems like when they're coming to you, what they're handing to you is the starting point, and you are really taking that and making much more out of it, turning it into much more of a science.
All depends, my friend. First thing that I need to do, Brad, is to slow down and calm down once they're telling me everything. So you tell me everything. So I say, Brad, how long have you been making these calls? How many agents have been on this? Is it full-time work or is it just sporadic? How large is your list? Are they doing 8 hours a day? Is it committed, dedicated? Is it consistent in regards to the rhetoric, just to see what the reactions are to that? Do you have talk time, contact, and conversion ratios to share with me? And so these are the sort of things that I would be asking initially, and who's doing their coaching. It's sometimes things are plug and play. Sometimes they have it so great I don't want to touch it. And then other times I'll see that they're, and God bless them, they want to make phone calls and they believe someone has their credit card at the ready and they get right through to Mr. Big, right? The largest client ever, kind of like with the Pursuit of Happiness, where he flips the list upside down and gets that appointment. And you may, from time to time, you get gifts. But my thing is more an investment in a process. I don't force hands or twist arms. Sometimes it's not a good fit. Yo, Brad, there might be someone in your office that curses or likes to motivate people through fear or do weird sort of meetings. It might not be a good fit. And then if you're late in regards to your response or there's nobody there to pick up the hot lead transfer, what do you think it's going to do to the 10 agents that are getting motivated? So I got to ask certain questions. Not that I'm better or worse than you, but I got to see. And don't tell me there's a girl named Jasmine in your office that can do 20 an hour when the average talk time is 5 minutes. It just doesn't work that way. And so a lot of the times through deduction and listening, they will, as you say, stop themselves and go, okay, Richard, what do you think? And enough of my circles. Where are the lines to get me out of here? And I will, since I haven't worked with them before, what I try to do is compare your vertical to others which are similar. I can tell you, listen, I've had 12 guys making phone calls for real estate commercial, even though you're doing real estate land. let me explain what those kind of calls are like on the MLS and what that looked like. And so I can compare things. Or prior to contract, why don't you send me your script? Brad, let me have a half a dozen agents make a recording for you so you can gauge the English and maybe you get the warm fuzzies if you like one agent better than another. You know, we can take it from there. And that's all. I like character during chaos. And I want you calling at me and screaming at me Monday before coffee because something happens.
And who is your ideal client?
I need somebody that's prepared. And it doesn't need to have everything in a bow. I just need someone that's prepared where they show up on time to an appointment. Or if I ask you to get me a list so the agents aren't dormant for an entire day, that's a wasted day. Or if no one's picking up or following up. So I don't mind where we begin, but we need to meet in the middle and have some sort of accountability. It's not just for Richard, because you and I are cool, Brad. We can have that phone call. But what about the 10 guys that are on the floor? They're getting frustrated. It's already 2 o'clock, man. You haven't sent the list yet. Come on.
Right. You
know? Go juice. And so that's very important for me.
And does it industry matter? I mean, you've serviced all sorts of industries.
Definitely. Yeah. I don't like things that are too saturated. I have nothing against, let's say, Dish Network or merchant processing. But we try those calls. And so a lot of the times you'll get, it's not even, these people are probably so bombarded with calls that they don't even let you say hello when they hang up. It's almost, I felt that on Sunday FISBOs too. You can kind of tell when a number's hot that day and they're getting bombarded. But yeah, there's certain industries that are long shots or that require way, way too much training. My concern with that is the attrition rate. But my industry has large attrition. There's two types. We have natural attrition. So your girlfriend might work at Amazon. It could be closer to your home or better schedule because of school. And you might make more money. I'll lose you. But I'm not going to lose, you know, I'll fire somebody if they're smoking weed at lunch, not coming to work or making their calls. But very rarely, if never, we give someone a walk of shame or make them cry on the floor. We don't do things like that. You know, sometimes people can self-destruct. You've got to put them aside. But, you know, it's expensive to get somebody on board and trained. And so when people tell me, I have a 6-week training, 2 months training, I take a deep breath. I go, you know, if Billy is there, right, for the 59 out of the 60 days and then quits that following day, you still got to pay him by the labor laws. It was almost like a running joke in Costa Rica. There was a very large call center here that had a nice campaign and it did their training for a month. And the joke was, yeah, man, you could work there 20 or 21 days out of a month. And on that 22 day, just don't go back. You'll get a full month's pay. And that's just not right. So anything that's past 2 weeks, I say, man, do you have a lot of checkpoints? Can I get them shadowing on the phone by the first week? Because I just don't want nodding heads, maximum and minimum quizzes, and a payroll. It's not right. And so the client needs to have certain checkpoints to ensure that we're making progress and we're getting our money's worth on a daily basis.
And are we talking both sales and customer service?
Everything.
Everything?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything. There's so much leverage out there. Amazon's here. So you could quit today and be hired tomorrow. And so how do I keep them? You asked about the pinball machines. Well, is that for everybody? No. But Brad, I'm only 150. So out of the 100,000 people that may be in this industry, I only need a couple dozen, you know, at a time. So I can I like people that like recess and dessert. Those are our kind of people.
And then talk to me about the future of the industry. I mean, what are, you know, all these days, all the different AI, this, that, whatever, right? Everybody's like, oh my God, it's going to take over everything. Like, what do you see as the future of your industry? And what do you need to do to stay out in front?
Sometimes you can't do anything about it. You ever see those huge car washes that have the machines? It's better than the guys back in the 70s. You know, it really gets your car washed. I see AI as gathering. And I think it's wonderful. It's the biggest net. It will catch every raindrop. You'll get every ounce out of it. And you can do 95, 96, up to 99% of that. The 1%, let's just use the 1%. is the empathy. It's really true. I don't like cold metal benches, and nobody else does. They like cozy things. And Brad, if I'm having the toughest day of my life, I'd call you, right? Or we'd go out and have a beer, or we just take a walk together as friends and just, you know, and get it out. And so when the machine says, I understand, or I feel you, or I know what it's like to lose something or gain something, or how could a machine say, I'm sorry you lost your mother or your father or comrade? That would seem, you know, I don't think that's authentic. I can't say hypocritical, but it's the kind of thing that just wouldn't fly. 99% yes, but that real hug and that real handshake, we love that human connection still. It's kind of, you know, in Costa Rica, certain people gravitate towards one another. It could be through athletics, surfers, or artists, or yoga community. But it's kind of interesting when you see another Anglo-Saxon businessman or another American traveling, you kind of notice one another. And so I believe in the future, people are going to be seeking out that concierge experience. I press zero. I'd rather speak to a ticketing agent at the airline and pay an extra $40 than do it online. Why? I don't know. I'm like that. And it will make that difference. But man, with that omni-channel non-voice support with chat and email, is it efficient? Yes, but they still haven't perfected it. You're still repeating things on the phone. You're still punching numbers. They still don't understand you correctly, and it's freaking frustrating. And then you hang up, and then when you finally do get somebody, then you're exploding. And people don't need to receive that sort of strap, no. And but it is reducing my industry, like kiosks at McDonald's. There will be the majority of my industry on certain back office support, non-voice support, obviously the chat and email support, and even very basic gathering customer support. And even this robo calling for hot lead transfers that they're doing, they haven't perfected yet, but it's still working. And so maybe my last thing, if this is just how it's going to go down and it's the final dance and our final bottle of champagne, then by all means, it's almost like in Casablanca when, you know, Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman were drinking all that champagne when France was being invaded by the Nazis. It was right before they separated. I feel the same way. Well, let's crack open those champagnes and be some of the greatest linguists and artists of speech that dance this language as much as we can until it fades. It's not going to happen tomorrow, maybe not in the next decade, but I do see it. Assisting in some areas, but yeah. Also
one thing to me, I mean, I'm on the same page with you. To me, I can't stand even like trying to use a chat feature in a way is when I realized, like, so this happened to me earlier today. Getting a new like business credit card, right? And so I applied online. It's like, you're approved. I'm like, all right, cool. I went to go grab my breakfast and I came back and it was like, oh, it waited too long. And now we're going to send you something in the mail. Like, God, okay. I need to be able to get in touch with these guys to see, right? And, yeah. And you know, it's one of the major banks. Oh, I mean, just it's crazy. First of all, start with the chat thing and then just get nowhere with that, which I knew I was going to get nowhere with that. And then like try to call a number and all these menus and all these. And to me, I honestly think that those companies that embrace true customer service and truth are going to stand out so much because more and more and more, there's just that feeling for me, for sure. There's just that feeling of like, oh my God, I need to talk to a person and it's almost impossible. And I'm so frustrated that I don't even want to engage with this company because I simply can't possibly get in touch with the person in a reasonable amount of time. And I'd prefer to go find another one that I can, you know, I mean, and I think that that is a feeling that a lot of people have. It's like, yes, all these cute little automation tools, they're helpful, but man, in the end, Yeah, to me, it's the most frustrating thing in the world. And I certainly hope that that's not the direction that things go. You know, I hope there's that thing where companies realize that, like, this is a good solution, but not a great one. And we want to stand out. And in order to stand out, we're going to commit to, you know, having live agents. So I hope that your business continues to thrive for years and years to come, because I despise the other direction, you know, and think there's a lot of other.
And most of these individuals are going to choose other industries just for that long-term stability.
Yeah.
You know, as I said before, and I completely agree with you. I don't worry about it. And if it happens to come in, as I mentioned before, if you just get 0.1% of businesses, you could be a millionaire. So you have the ability to find that company, as you say, that's mom and pop, small niche, that you'll get the fulfillment you're looking for.
Well, I tell you what, it has been amazing to talk to you. I love hearing your story. I love hearing your passion about everything. You know, like I said, when it comes to the environment, the industry that you're working in, and to me, to see kind of how you go about dealing with your people and everything, it's been a fun conversation.
Thanks, man.
How can people get in touch with you? You know, what can I get out there to the audience so customers can find you?
Well, they can buy a ticket, fly to Costa Rica, and come visit me.
I'm coming down in August.
I got a very, very large Facebook fan page of 130,000 local Costa Rican Ticos. You'll be there when this goes live. And real fast for your audience, Costa Rica is north of Panama and south of Nicaragua. And we're the only democratic society in Central America. So there's no standing army. They put all their money back into education. They have a 95% literacy rate. I mentioned Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle. They're here. We're known for medical and ecotourism. And Brad, are you a surfer? Because we have some of the best surfing in the world in Hermosa.
Yeah, so I've been there a few times. We're coming back again in August. We've got a wedding down in Manuel Antonio. I love it down there. Yeah.
Well, sweet, man. When you're in town, I'll come see you. I'll come drive
down.
Yeah,
and I feel like, too, in general, in my circles, the past few years, well, I feel like maybe since COVID again, like Costa Rica has become once again a really popular place to go. I feel for a while it was kind of 10 years ago, and then it seemed to kind of fade, and now it seems to be really back. You know, there's just a lot of friends of mine and whatever that are going down there and spending time. So, yeah, I think it's lovely down there.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I got past some parents' guilt, married the girl of my dreams. Knock on wood, started a business. So you're looking at a long shot. That hit. Brad, my stars were aligned. I can't believe this happened. In fact, I'm on your podcast telling tall tales is amazing. But your audience, just don't be hard on yourself. Realize at the end of the day, you do things with honorable intentions. And these naysayers and gray believers, they just love you and they want to protect you. But sometimes they might be holding you back from a vision quest. And so you get 100 years on this planet, drink as much life as you can. That's my only suggestion.
All right. Well, awesome. Thank you, Richard. It's been wonderful talking to you. And have a great one. And I'll see you down in Costa Rica in a few months.
Take care, buddy. Pura vida.
I'll see you.
Thank you for listening to Executing the Vision. If you'd like to be a guest, go to emergelabs.us and click on the podcast page. If you like what you heard, please share the episode and subscribe. Ratings and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. You can find us on Instagram at brad.emergelabs, as well as X, Facebook, and LinkedIn, where we strive to provide valuable information on business and life. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show and what you'd like to see in future episodes. Thank you again and have a great day.